crying I didn't attain Krishna. Madhava Narpuni Pad, he was the first devotee in this Kali Yuga to bring the pure love of God with the characteristic of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he Unatamtvava Rasa, the topmost resplendent loving feelings of Krishna that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to preach. This Madhava Puri, he gave what is Krishna's Kaviraj sometimes described as Premankur, the sprout, just the beginning to sprout, the tree of love of God. So Madhava Puri, he, before passing away, he was lying sick for many days, not actually sick, but he was exhibiting the pastime of being sick, because we should understand that a great liberated devotee, he is not subject to sickness or health or any such condition. He is beyond all these things. Sometimes devotees, they exhibit the pastime of being sick, and Madhava Nupuri was doing so before passing away, shortly before his passing away from this world. And he lamented. Krishna, I could not attain you. What should I do? Where should I go? I could not attain you. So this mood of plaintive crying for Krishna, plaintive means calling out and feeling great distress, pain in the heart. This is called in Sanskrit kata. Say that word in Hindi, kato. It means just like that calling out in distress, the distress that one feels due to separation from the beloved and not being able to attain the beloved. So we'll find this term, kato, that often used in Jesus and in Chaitanya to describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kata, this feeling of distress, which was that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he personally experienced this every night while at Puri, while residing in Puri. After going for his tour to South India, then he was residing at the Gambhira, that is the room in the house of Kashi Mishra, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed, and he would pass the night most of the night he would pass with Sridharta and Ramananda Rai, his two most intimate associates. During the daytime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be engaged in various activities with many devotees, and they would be doing lots of kirtan, and they would be listening to Bhagavatam. Especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go daily. He would walk from his house to Gambhira, a little distance. Now there are so many roads, so just go straight. So not very far. Anyway, to the temple of Totokopina, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were given the Dada Pandit, the service of worshipping Gopinath, the Gopinath deity, who came to be known as Totokopinath, because he was Toto, that means a garden, that's a lot of the term, garden. So that was a nice garden there at the time, and there Gopinath, Dada Pandit, worship Gopinath there along with the Radha and Lalita beauties. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go there daily with so many other associates and in the courtyard of the temple of Gopinath, Mahaprabhu would listen to Kadatha Pandit recite the Bhagavatam, and especially he would recite the parts, sections of the Bhagavatam describing the pastimes of Dhruv Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, which it's also stated that even in his youth, before taking sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially liked to hear these sections from the Bhagavatam. So in these ways, he would be bathing three times in the sea. He had a regular schedule. He would go for darshan of Jagannath. He would accept prasad, usually in different people's, different devotees, residences. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was engaged in various ways during the day. And in this way, he remained happy during the day. But at night, when there were no various activities, just he would be alone with his mind. If we're alone, we're alone with our minds. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would say, that others' heart and their mind is the same, but my mind is in Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling that separation from Vrindavan, very painful, feeling very pain with Ramananda Raya and Sri Dhammadhara. He would experience the painful ecstasy, which sounds like an oxymoron, or contradiction, that painful ecstasy. Ecstasy means something which is very enjoyable, and painful. It's, generally, don't think that pain is very enjoyable. Of course, there is a certain kind of mentally deranged person called a masochist, inflicts pain on his body and he thinks it's enjoyable. But generally, it's not considered enjoyable. Pain and enjoyment are not considered synonymous, rather the opposite. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was especially absorbed in the feelings of Srimati Radharani after Krishna left Vrindavan. So that was very painful for Allah, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing that. And Ramananda Rai and Sri Dhammadhara, they would sing different verses from Shastra, from Bhagavatam, from the songs and poems composed by Chandidas, Vidyapati, and Jaidev Goswami, especially that Gita Govinda. And Ramananda Roy would also recite prayers or verses from his own Jagannatha Nataka, a drama which he had composed. And especially from these sources and from other sources also, they would recite different poems and shlokas and couplets which would enhance the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or when he became too much deeply overcome by despair of not attaining Krishna, then sometimes Sri Ramada would sing a different verse which would change the mood, and how then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be saved from his very deep despair and would come to a more happy mood. But generally, his nights were at the Gambhira would spend in prema kartha, simply crying plaintively for Krishna. And this was the topmost ecstasy that he experienced. This is difficult to understand how the grief of separation from Krishna experiences the highest ecstasy, but that is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the nature of praying or love for Krishna. It is very, sometimes described as very bitter, or sometimes described as a burning pain in the heart, but at the same time it is extraordinarily sweet. So both characteristics of it. The pain is sweetness. Prabhupada described in Nectar Devotion, he explained this, that how is it that this frame of love of Krishna is full of distress, but at the same time it's advertised as the love of ecstasy. Prabhupada gave an example that the Ramayana, in Ramayana, the principal rasa, there are different rasa, there are five primary rasas: Shama, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsala, and Srinara. And there are also supplementary rasas, gonas, Mukhya rasa and gonas. So among the gonas, or the supplementary rasas, one is Karunya rasa, which actually these are all terms which come in dramatics. We find in the Natya Shastra. Or the Natya Shastra is the science of dramatics and dance. So all these are described, how the actors will manifest the different rasas, and with the aim of making that rasa become manifest within the heart of the audience. So, in the Western world, there's also the science of dramatics, and exactly the term which corresponds to karunya rasa is pathos. It's a mood of pathos. It's a feeling of sadness, which at the same time has a sweet tinge to it. Sweet in the sense that there's a sentiment for the we'll find it. Just like in so many dramas, in Shakespeare's dramas, there are tragedies and there are comedies and there are tragicomedies. People also go to see the tragedy. People know it's a sad story. And they go to see it. Why do they go to see it? Because there's some pleasure in that. So, Ram Lila, it's mostly, you can say, it's a tragedy. It's full of karunya rasa. There's a pathos. So Prabhupada gave the example how everyone knows that Ram Lila, there's so much sadness in it, that there was so much happiness, that Ram is going to be crowned as the prince regent of Ayodhya, and how wonderful, all the citizens are very happy, he's very nicely married with Sita Devi, and what better couple could there be than this? All very happy to see Lord Ram in his happiness, that is, the happiness of the devotees, seeing the Lord happy in his happiness. But then, all of a sudden, like a thunderbolt that strikes on the head of all the citizens of Ayodhya, Ram is banished to the forest to live not in happiness, but in a very demeaning situation for a kshatriya, bereft of all his wealth and simply living in very poor, poverty-stricken forest. So everyone in Ayodhya was very much saddened by this, everyone except Lord Brown himself. He simply accepted, all right, he was not. Showing the example of the Kshatriya, how he can rule, how he should rule, without attachment, without attachment. So eventually he came back to rule, but he wasn't attached to that ruling, and later on was he also showed how I'm not attached to ruling, I'm only attached to serving Lord Brahma. So the whole of Ayodhya was plunged into distress. But Ram was very happy. He said that when he came to the forest, actually, I'm very happy. It's very nice. I like the forest. It's, you see, Sita was also distressed by to see Lord Ram with his hair matted and to see him just going with bare feet without being served by so many others. But she's also very happy to have this intimate association. And she also. The forest life is difficult, but there are many pleasurable things also. To see the deer jumping and the changing of the seasons with different flowers and fruits. So Sita and Ram, they were very happy together in the forest, but then again, unhappiness struck when the personification of evil. Ravan stole away Sita. Oh, anyway, it's a very long story, and eventually Ram retrieved Sita from the hands of Ravan. So many friendships made, and so many things in the meantime. And having attained having again attained Sita, then she came into public, and all the monkeys and everyone who was there were waiting. And normally a woman won't come in public, but there are certain instances in which she may, and it was cited from Shastra, she may come. And all the monkeys, they actually wanted to see her, not out of an improper desire to see her, but they wanted to see, who is this? Who is this lady who Ram has gone to so much trouble, and all of Lanka has been raised, and so many people killed, and for the sake of this, who is this personality that Ram is so much attached to? We're so much. We ourselves are so much attached to Lord Rama. Then how great is this lady that he is so much attached to her? They didn't think it's a bad thing. We should be attached to her. So for so many reasons, they wanted to see Sita Devi, and she was also very anxious to see Lord Rama. Of course, she was very anxious to see Lord Ram. She had no other thought in her mind than Ram. She was so much distressed being taken away by Ram, but she was so happy to see Lord Ram. But then when she came into his presence, she saw that he didn't look happy. He looked very grim. And he spoke to her very harshly. What sounded like very harsh words. You'd think that his heart would be melted to receive. But he spoke very harshly. He said that, I have now done my duty to uphold the dignity of my family, that my wife has been kidnapped, and I have killed the perpetrator of this crime, and released my wife from his clutches. Now I have done my duty, and you may go wherever you like, because you've been away from my home for 1 year. We cannot trust any woman who's away from the protection of her husband, even for 1 day, so not to speak of a Yeah. So therefore, now you are freed and you may go wherever you like and do whatever you like. And this was very horrible news for Sita Devi and for everyone. You know, when we went to this whole fight and we thought that we're going to reunite Sita with Ram, now they're united and he's, you know, I don't have anything more to do with you. So more sadness. And then Sita Devi, she said that she called and all right, then we should test Aida. Tesha, I have not even for a moment thought of or desired even slightly within my mind anyone but Lord Rama. And let the fire go. I shall enter the fire and I shall call Agni Devi, who is present everywhere. He is one of the devas, being the deva of the fire element. He is present everywhere because fire is present wherever there is heat, there is fire. So there is heat, otherwise this world would be frozen. And Agni is present within everyone's body, within every living body. Especially there's heat in the body, so it's present. So she called to Agni. She said, I will enter fire. And Agni can bear witness that if I have ever, even for a moment, even slightly, desired anyone other than Ram, or if in any way my chastity towards Lord Ram has been violated, even slightly, even subconsciously within my mind, then may Agni consume this body because I myself have no desire to maintain it. If I myself be even slightly unchaste, then let Agni consume my body. Otherwise, let him bear witness that I am the chaste wife suitable to be reunited with Lord Brahma. So, Lakshman had the unpleasant duty of building a fire for Sita to enter, and she entered. And all of the monkeys that were present, they were fighting. Previously they were fighting, killing without any mercy, slaughtering the Rakshasas. But they could not see this. They simply come. They had seen for so many days blood and death, but this they could not see. They simply covered them on the screen. And how did they do it? So more sadness. And then happiness. All right, now Sita and Rama are again united. And then unhappiness for Lord Rama. That came before the Dasha, the reason unhappiness left this world. So that was unhappiness for Lord Rama. And again, happiness, now they're reunited and all. Came back to Lanka, and all the citizens very happy, everything is very wonderful. Now Lord Ram is back with Sita. And then again, there came the Lord Ram saw the necessity to banish Sita. And then he lived for so many years, 12,000 years, ruling Ayodhya without Sita. So it's simply that there are moments where there are happiness in Vandila. But wherever there is happiness, there's a little bit of happiness, then again everything comes down to the sad situation. So Prabhupada, of course I've dilated a bit on this, but Prabhupada just gave briefly in the Nectar of Devotion describing how Ramlila is full of sadness. But then how is it, Prabhupada gives the rhetorical question, how is it that great devotees like Hanuman and so many other great devotees of Lord Ram, and even not great devotees, but probably devotees, they like to hear Ram Lila again and again and again. Because actually it's a giver of happiness. It appears to be distress, but actually it's simply transcendental happiness. Shunyu Sukhadam Shubhadam Avasaram. To hear the pastimes of the Lord in his various avatars, including that of Lord Ram, which is mentioned among the Das avatars. This is from the Dasa avatar story. That the hearing about the pastimes of the Lord in his various avatars is, it gives happiness and auspiciousness. So it all may appear to be very sad. It is all transcendental. There's no sadness in the way. There's no sadness. There's no distress. There may appear to be distress, but what appears to be distress in the pastimes of the Lord and of his devotees, it is all transcendental happiness. Jato deko vaishnavya bevohaduk nischoyena janeno taha paramanda suk. Vrindavan Das Thakur in Chaitanya Bhagavata has given the warning, don't think that devotees are ever distressed, because their apparent distress is actually it's all transcendental happiness. Once a devotee showed Prabhupada this, there's quite a well-known picture. I don't know if it's well-known nowadays, but in those days it was, even when I joined, it was quite a well-known picture. That was a photo of Prabhupada. It was on the wall of our temple, very place, temple in London. Of Prabhupada with his mouth turned down. We see someone smiling and with upturned, that's smiling, it seems like happy, and down it seems like sad. And one devotee said to Prabhupada, the Prabhupada in this photo, you look very sad. And Prabhupada said, you don't know. That was a moment of great ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy. Krishna's pastimes are full of ecstasy. Devotees are full of ecstasy, even if it's sometimes manifest as crying, it's manifest as separation from Krishna, which the devotee feels very sad. It's all transcendental bliss. One thing I noticed about in American culture, especially, culture we're using for the sake of a better term, in the absence of any other term, although it's not really a very precise term for the American way of life, but they seem to equate happiness with smiling and laughing. Whereas we see here in India, it's not that people, they always have to be smiling and laughing. It's a more grave kind of culture. It's not. In America, if someone gives you a gift, you have to make a big, oh, thank you very much, wonderful. It's required in the culture that you have to, you live in America, you have to make a big show and you have to say, thank you. Whereas in Indian culture, you just accept it. It's not required to make a good show. And if one doesn't make a good show, what happened? He gave something, maybe a child or something. Is he really so much overcome with ecstasy because of the child? But rather giving gifts and receiving gifts. It's a token of appreciation or respect. But it's the same thing in the marital relationship in the Western world. The husband and wife always have to tell each other, I love you, and they have to kiss each other when he drops off to work or she drops in to work. They have to kiss each other. They're very much making a show. And it very much requires an outward show, outward expression. And often inside there's nothing very much there. Whereas in Indian culture, the husband and wife, they don't say to each other, I love you. If he says, I love you, he's being probably not. He doesn't. Maybe he thinks I'm down. There's no need to say I love you. It's accept, of course I love you. It's not, you don't even think about does he love you or does he love you. Whether he does or whether he doesn't. Anyway, you're married and life has to go on. So it's a much more subtle culture in which feelings for each other, it's not required that they be externally expressed. It's understood. The relationships are not based on a big melodramatic outward show, but rather the feeling is there, or the exchange of rasa that is there, that goes, the rasa goes on the more subtle platform, and the expression of love is how in one's everyday dealings and behavior and service like this. It's because in Western countries, like giving a gift, because people are so much attached to material things that they think if love is expressed by giving people things. You love your children by giving them many toys. But actually, when they give many toys to their children, but they don't spend any time with them. The average American child gets 40 minutes a week from their parent, usually one parent, because their parents are before us. So they get 40 minutes a week, and they get $40 worth of toys a week, but they don't get action. The parents think, oh, well, I don't have time for much, so give them a toy. That will show I love them and they'll make them happy. There's nothing there. It's just something external. So this exchange of loving feelings in Indian culture, it's definitely that giving a gift, that's what Preeti Lakshmi, the Dati, Prati Krishnati, giving and receiving gifts. That's a symptom of love. But it's not that what the gift you give, but what did you give me? What am I going to get? What kind of gift? You have to spend a lot of money, and then we'll understand that you actually love you. But no, the gift, just like Krishna says, Paptam pushpam palam tayam yome bhaktya prayamchati tadam bhaktivayam ashami prayatam. Leaf, flower, fruit, or water. What is that? If you're a millionaire, multi-millionaire, now I'm going to give you a gift, but here it is, a flower. You could have bought me, a house or something. You could have bought me a new Rolls Royce car to go in my collection. But you give me a flower, what is that? So a flower, what kind of a gift is that? Anyone, anywhere, except if you're living in some desert in China or something, even in the desert in Arabia, you can get flowers and you'll find the ladies, South Indian ladies in Dubai all wearing fresh flowers, mogra. It is not going in Dubai, they fly it in daily from India. So anyway, flowers are generally available anywhere. It's not a very great thing to offer someone a flower or a leaf. But fruit, what is the fruit? If someone is possessive, if someone is desiring material possessions, then what is this? Give me an orange? But the whole idea is that it's not the gift that's given, but the love with which it's given. So Krishna has got everything. What can you give Krishna? You offer him a leaf and flower, you don't want it, and he will accept it if it's offered with love. Of course, if one does have the means to serve Krishna with more than the income, it would be more difficult. If one is a crocodile or multi-crocodile, then it is more suitable that one offer Krishna not only fruit, flower, leaf, and water, and build himself huge apartments in 20 different cities, And he should also, he should utilize his wealth for building nice temples for the God. That will be a better he. Otherwise, where is the money? You only offer a flower, and you have the ability to serve in more capacity. Then it brings into question, where is the love? But actually love, that is not fixed. Even one may have lots of money and build good temples, that in itself may not necessarily be indicative of love. Because often people, they build a temple for their own prestige and name and fame. That's why, just to give an example, in various cities in India, there are what are known as Birla Mandirs. Actually, they're Lakshmi Narayan Mandirs. But they're known as Birla Mandirs. So who's getting the worship? Whose glories are being compounded more by building these temples? If they're known as Birla Mandirs. It's the Birla family. So, it's not necessarily that one is performing bhakti for the pleasure of the Lord, but if he does actually do so, then the Lord will be very satisfied, even with the flower, fruit, and water. If one actually has love for Krishna. So this series of verses that we're reading now, they are describing love of Krishna, which is the mature fruit of practice of the Krishna consciousness sadhana program. From sadhana comes siddhi, and the siddhi is love of Krishna. And the symptoms, some of the symptoms are being mentioned here. The one will cry. Tears of regret that I did not attain Krishna, just like this Madhavendra Puri was crying, I did not attain Krishna. All my life I was searching for Krishna, but I never attained Krishna. This is the ecstasy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach, how to search for Krishna. Always looking for Krishna. He loved the Vajadevi Kichana. Feeling of regret or sadness, distress. I could not attain Krishna. Where are you, Krishna? Six Goswamis have been done for manifesting this. Hey Radhe, hey Krishna. Oh, all the gopis have been done. Lalita, where are you? Are you under the, are you on a tree at the foot of the Govardhan Hill or in the forest on the bank of the Yamuna, crying out loudly in Vrindavan? They would manifest their feelings of distress, which are actually the highest transcendental bliss. So searching for Krishna. Not that I got invited, yes, everything finished. Oh. Of course, sometimes the devotee feels like that because this vipralamba bhava, or the feeling of separation from Krishna that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested, that has to be nourished at least sometimes with sambhog or meeting of Krishna. Sometimes there are different phases of Krishna's personality. Meeting with Krishna and separation from Krishna. So sometimes also the devotees feel that, yes, now I'm so fortunate. I have the opportunity to engage in the service of Krishna. But mostly devotees, especially in the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're cultivating this feeling of separation from Krishna. We should also, as Prabhupada writes, we should also try to cultivate the feeling of separation from Krishna. Not in an artificial manner, but we consider ourselves, I'm just like the and it's within the manner that is being described here in this report by Vishwanathar Thakur, that we should feel regret that I couldn't attain Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, I couldn't attain Krishna. But then, why are you crying for Krishna? Oh, that's just a show. Because if I actually attain Krishna, how could I? If I actually attained Krishna, then how could I go on living in this body? So this is the proof I couldn't attain Krishna. So the devotee should cultivate this feeling, this regretful feeling, why I can't attain Krishna? Why am I still attracted to the objects of the senses? Why am I still attracted to my bodily relationships? Why am I still attracted to this material? I cannot attain Krishna. So devotees should feel this. Actually, we are separated from Krishna. We are separated from Krishna by our illicit desires, because we desire to enjoy this vina prakriti, this energy of Krishna, which is separate from Krishna. So therefore, we're separated from Krishna by our own wrong desire. Krishna bhuti, seji vanadi vayavo. We are separated from Krishna. Not as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been in separation from Krishna in praying akatara. We have neither prayed nor akatara. We have neither love for Krishna, neither will we call it our distress for Krishna. We're feeling quite satisfied in our materialistic situation. This is lamentable. We should lament for our lack of love for Krishna. This is being suggested here, or described here, by Vishwanatha Chakravarti. And Rudanti, Prasanti, also laughing, sometimes in ecstasy about Krishna. The devotee is laughing, seeing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, seeing or hearing about the wonderful pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Devotee sometimes in transcendental delight is laughing. There are so many symptoms given. This should not be imitated, but definitely if one is even beginning to awaken one's love for Krishna, which from the beginning of Krishna consciousness, the whole process is meant for awakening love for Krishna. And from the very beginning, one can hear about Krishna and begin to appreciate his wonderful pastimes and take pleasure in them. Because if we don't take pleasure in hearing about Krishna, then we'll take pleasure in hearing Ravya Katha. Who is the next president of America? Of course, because as preachers we live in this world, we may be in contact with its goings on to some extent. But that is not our interest. That is not our subject matter. That what will be the next political configuration? That is not our subject matter. As in passing, or as some kind of, not exactly necessity, but can be. For those who are living in this world and preaching Krishna or attempting to preach Krishna conscious, then to know, they should know some of these things. Who's the Prime Minister of the country and different things like that? Otherwise, we won't be much. I had that personal experience once. When I was in England, and then I was speaking with some guests at the temple, and they mentioned the name someone to me, Kala. And I said, Who are you talking about? Kala? And he said, if you don't know, it's the Prime Minister. And he'd been 2 years the Prime Minister, and since I joined the temple, I've never bothered to keep in contact with any news. I had no idea who the Prime Minister of the country was. So, in the estimation of that person I was speaking to, me, I was a very strange person. I was what's called otherworldly. There's a word in English, otherworldly. It means a synonym, or it's to have your head in the clouds. It means that you're so much absorbed in some other world, like some it means like a spiritual person who's so spiritual that they're totally impractical. It's a somewhat derogatory term. If you're stay in the country, and you're not a citizen of that country, and you don't know the Prime Minister, it's just that the audience coming from other countries, like myself living in India, if we don't know the Prime Minister, it's that people think that we're not giving enough respect to the country, so at least we're certainly not well informed, because the Prime Minister of India is an internationally known figure among people who read the pages of the newspapers apart from the sports pages. So some contact we should have with this world, but our pleasure is not in hearing the news of this world, which is always stale. That example I was given the other night in Hyderabad, what's the fresh news today? Give me the news. What's in the newspaper? What's going on? That same fresh news, hot news. After a few days, that will only be useful for putting Procorazine from the hot dog. The same hot news is now hot and hot Procorazine. Otherwise, no one has any interest. Or sometimes in Russia, we used to see the newspapers. They tear it up and they put it into little pieces and they put it in the toilet for people to wipe their backsides with. So, you know, it's like you have a picture of President Bush. So it becomes very useful. But this Bhagavatam, we're hearing the Krishna Lila after many thousands of years, and it's always fresh. It doesn't become fresh news. What's the news? Krishna ran away from the battlefield. Krishna ran away? Why should Krishna run away? Krishna's not afraid of anyone. Why is that? And there's news analysis, editorial, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, editorial. Why Krishna ran away? Well, there are so many things, yes. And he doesn't want to, it's below his yavan, Kala, the name. It's below his dignity to fight with a yavan, and if he doesn't run away, he's going to have to fight with him. And then he doesn't want to personally kill him, so he arranges to get him killed and to have his devotee Muchakunda woken up also. And also there's some pressing business, some very important business, that he has to marry Rukmini, so that's also what follows on from this lila. And then, but doesn't it look, they make him look, you know, he's afraid of Jarasandha, and, but he already defeated Jarasandha 17 times, and you know, Jarasandha is such a fool, he's coming back again. What was it, 18 times he defeated him? The 18th time he attacked. He's such a fool, he can't understand, he's going to yet again be annihilated. So he's only got his coping left. His whole army is destroyed, and he didn't get the message after 17 times. So one way of defeating someone is just to ignore them. Just like Prabhupada is describing Prabhupada Lamrita, how in the early days in the 26th Second Avenue, one man would come every night with and he would read from a philosophy book something, and Prabhupada every night would just smash his arguments. And then one night Prabhupada just didn't say anything. And he defeated him that way. In other words, didn't you get the message yet? Whatever you have to say, it's all nonsense. So in this way Prabhupada defeated him simply by ignoring him. So in this way, Krishna also is not that he's afraid, but he also defeated. So it ended this way. Commentary that was fresh news. Now we're reading from Bhagavatam, the same thing again and again and again. But again and again we're reading. Because it doesn't become old, it doesn't become stale, it's always fresh, hearing about Krishna. So hearing about Krishna, we may cry, we may laugh, we may sing, we may dance, we aspire for that pain. We should cry for that pain. When Okay, only one question, 아마 아브라함은 루치, 신앙함의 루치, 비교법이 거기 루치에 있었죠. Praying that we are free from all offenses, we should chant the name in purity. Devotee aspires for that perfection stage. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And kirtan can begin prior to the lectures from the Samhita part of the contents. So, Hare Krishna. Is there any question?
Our goal of life is love and institution.
The goal of life of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is love and love and separation.
So, but I want to have a recommend to me small operations. So, but actually, that you should nurture the separation.
You should nurture the separation.
But then, I mean, the goal is to have a separation. The separation that I have to experience is different from the separation of this.
The separation we have at the moment is we're separated by our own wrong desires. So we have to get out of that separation and feel that this transcendental separation of Krishna.
But that is
the gift of pure love for Krishna that is given by Krishna, but the means and the end is the same. We shouldn't artificially try to pretend that I'm on the platform of feeling separation from Krishna. But at the same time, if we do, actually I explained this in the class. We should hear about Krishna, and actually that will awaken. By hearing about Krishna from pure devotees, that will awaken at least the beginnings of a desire to attain to that platform. And our crying at this stage is the crying that I couldn't attain Krishna, I'm still so far. This Gopinath song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur exactly expresses the emotions of one who is aspiring or feeling that I couldn't attain Krishna, but while having material desires, but at the same time aspiring for pure devotional service. So, exactly what our mood should be, that can, actually that's a very interesting song also, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur also meant something somewhat chastising Krishna at the same time. That he didn't, I don't have any strength to purify myself. But why are you not? I'm your servant. Why do you consider me? He doesn't. Don't think of me as someone external from you. I'm your servant. Why are you neglecting me? But in general, the mood he's seeing Ami tu murukavati. Tumi tu pandita vami. Mudera mongol. Tumi ambition. I am very simple, rather than noble qualities. This mood, I aspire to attain you, but I am very fond of you. So this mood exactly conditions of the mood that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has expressed in his own book. This mood we should have. Not try to artificially pretend that I am the liberated platform. Nothing artificial.